following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield IMG College.
Wings up, Eagle Nation! Touchdown, Georgia Southern!
This is Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Eagle athletics.
Take a look through all the other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. A lot of road action. A lot of teams hitting the old I-16 out of town.
Getting on the steel horse and taking us to parts north, south, west, wherever. Can't really go too much farther east.
Now let's return to the Learfield IMG College studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
That's a fact, Jack.
Welcome into another edition of Inside Eagle Nation, live here from J.I. Clement Stadium. If you're listening to this live, go ahead and grab your lunch and talk a little Georgia Southern athletics with us. Colin Lacey alongside the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed. Grab your burger, grab your salad, whatever you might have for lunch.
Even better time to do it because we got another Benco briefing just a few hours ago recapping the really good stretch that Georgia Southern Athletics has been on when you include last weekend, the announcement about women's tennis going to Atlanta for their first ever NCAA championship. Tonight we're going to find out where men's golf is going after they won the Sun Belt last week. So this is a really good time to be a Georgia Southern Eagle.
As always, Inside Eagle Nation is presented by our good friends at Arcola Septic. Arcola Septic is your premier septic services provider to Bullock, Bryan, and adjoining counties, and a great family-owned business that's run by a pair of Georgia Southern alumni. Make sure to give them a call at 912-318-7939 or visit them online at arcolaseptic.com. For both commercial and residential customers, their more than 10 years of experience can help you out with pumping and servicing your septic system, drain field repairs, new system installation, and all of your septic needs. Remember to follow them on Facebook, Arcola Septic, yesterday's Meals on Wheels. A lot to get to, a lot of excitement around Georgia Southern Athletics, as you alluded to just a few moments ago. But Georgia Southern, we will start with the men's golf side. Last week we were talking about, at this time, how men's golf had taken the lead in stroke play. They ended up winning stroke play as Ben Carr won the individual medalist. He's the fourth Eagle to win the medalist honors in the short time that Georgia Southern has been in the Sun Belt Conference, starting in 2014-2015. Georgia Southern then goes on to match play and won the Sun Belt Conference tournament, taking down Little Rock and Coastal Carolina in that match play. And as you mentioned, they will find out which NCAA regional they will have tomorrow afternoon, a 2 p.m. selection show on the Golf Channel.
The good thing is that both Georgia Southern and Little Rock were probably going to get into the tournament anyway. Eagles are a top 40 team, and I think they take 81 in the golf tournament, which I didn't realize it was that different of a number. They were both probably going to be in, but anytime you can bring back a championship, you just don't want to be, oh, we're in anyway, let's just get our shots in, let's hop a plane, and let's get back to town. No, they went out, they got it, they beat a really good Little Rock team, and it was nice to see guys like Ben Carr, Brett Barron, who had been in this program for so long, Jake Maples, all performed so well. Maples was great in both ends against Coastal and Little Rock, and watching them be as excited as they were out in El Dorado and then having a chance to welcome them back to Statesboro Airport just a few days ago. It's becoming a regular thing, just 10 days in between championships after we did the same with women's tennis. Awesome thing, and we know Carter's true blue through and through Claxton guy, and he's been here for 14 years. That's the ninth time he's going to an NCAA tournament. That's sustained success that you just don't back into.
Don't mess with Carter.
No.
Had a lot of fun last night for Georgia Southern women's tennis in the selection show special over at the Ted Smith Family Football Operations Center. Found out that Georgia Southern will be going to their first ever NCAA regional, and it'll be in Atlanta. They will take on Georgia Tech, who is the 12th national seed in the tournament. They will face Georgia Tech on Friday. The winner of the 2-3 match in Ole Miss in North Florida, they will face the winner of Georgia Southern in Georgia Tech coming up on Saturday. But a lot of going through Sean McCaffrey's head. We talked to him after the selection show had come up. He goes, yeah, now we've got to figure out hotels. We've got to figure out where we're going, when we're going, what the schedule looks like. And he said that he would take that every single year if he had to.
You had a feeling that it was going to be a regional bid. They weren't going to have to worry about getting on a plane and going somewhere. And they were just up in the Atlanta area. They won in Peachtree City to clinch over South Alabama to win the Sun Belt Championship. But getting to go right back up there and knowing if you win two matches over the course of 3 days, you're going to Orlando the very next week.
Crazy to think. And that's kind of what they were talking about. He's used the mantra of we're not done yet, and the fact of Georgia Southern had to go a crazy route to get to the Sun Belt Conference Championship. We're down in both the semifinals and the finals, had to rally back in both of those. And being around that team last night, you could really tell, especially with Sean McCaffrey, how much passion there is for Georgia Southern and Georgia Southern women's tennis in that group, of really signifying the family mentality that we've talked about with a lot of different teams.
And it's carried them to an 11-match winning streak. They've set the school record for wins. And let's just hope this run continues, because it's been a major storyline this spring. We've had a lot of major storylines, but this one gets pushed to the very top of the list.
Again, they will start their NCAA regional on Friday against the 12th-ranked Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. The winner of that matchup will take on the winner of the 2-3 match in Ole Miss in North Florida. That'll happen a little bit later. It'll be a 2 o'clock first serve for Georgia Southern and Georgia Tech on Friday. Had a couple of new games announced for Georgia Southern football. I say a couple.
Quite a few.
Had a home-and-home with Army, 2030 in the Statesboro area, 2031 at West Point.
Which we knew about that one.
Lumping it all in.
Right.
Eastern Michigan had a home-and-home as well, 2027. They will be making the trip to Allen E. Paulson Stadium. 2029, Georgia Southern will be heading up to Ypsilanti. Georgia Southern heads to Clemson in 2026. Georgia Southern will head to Kentucky in 2029, and in 2030, Georgia Southern and Ole Miss will make up the cancellation from this past season over at the Grove.
And the good news about that one is the guarantee is for a little bit more than it would have been in 2021.
So you've got – and I know it sounds way off in the distance, way off in the clear blue yonder, but people were saying – yeah, there you go. People were saying the same thing when Georgia Southern a couple of years ago signed LSU, and it kept getting pushed back, and then you finally get to that version of Death Valley, and it's there before you know it.
Yeah.
So a whole host of new games on the football schedule. You can go to gseagles.com, and they've got the non-conference portion of the schedules laid out all the way through, I think, 30-31 is the farthest out it goes.
There's still a couple of spots that need filled. I think as early as 25, I think you still need a P5 game in 25. But this takes care of some things, getting some contracts signed. And look, we know it's way out there, but the fact that these relationships have been established, even if something happens, we're not going to have to worry about a COVID again or anything like that, at least we hope. But with those relationships established, if something were to happen in the couple of years leading into those games, then you would just hope that you could continue to keep those, but just bump them back and eventually get them played. And this is way out there, but with football, you have to do this. This isn't one like a COVID year where you can just schedule games like this, get an Army this quickly, get a UMass this quickly. That typically isn't the norm. It was nice to be able to do that in a way this year, but at the same time, we know that athletic departments, especially at that level, they need to plan 5-10 years in advance.
You go through the non-conference schedule for football. Again, coming up this year in 2021, it all starts against Gardner-Webb September the 4th. The next week, you're at Florida Atlantic down in Boca Raton, Fayetteville, Arkansas, the following week at Arkansas, and then towards the end of the season, BYU will make their way to Allen E. Paulson Stadium on November the 20th. And then past that, everything is pretty well locked in until 2024. In 22, you've got Michigan State at Nebraska, or Morgan State, rather, at Nebraska.
Yeah, Michigan State, that would have been a new one.
Morgan State at Nebraska, at UAB, and then Ball State at Paulson Stadium. 23, you've got the Citadel and UAB at Paulson.
Right.
Then you're at Wisconsin and at Ball State as part of that home and home. 24, Boise State makes their way to Paulson. You're at Ole Miss and at BYU. You're still looking for a home FCS opponent in 2024. 25, you are home against Liberty at Fresno State, and then you're still waiting for an away FBS, a home FCS as part of 25, and then you get deeper and deeper and to the...
That's when the hairs are start getting grayer, and we'll we'll have different perspective on those when we get to those.
We've talked about how busy Jared Benko's been the last couple of months and over a year now that he's been the athletic director. He's put on some incredible games coming up in the next 5-10 years.
Look, when you're an athletic director in the FBS, it seems like there's something football-related every day. You, in Georgia Southern's case, you got 17 sports to worry about, but it seems that there's always something that needs to be tended to with football, and now that Georgia Southern is in the FBS, rightfully so.
So Georgia Southern softball, well, they did a thing this weekend after tough stretch to the start of the season. Kim Dean and company swept South Alabama over at Eagle Field. It was a 9-1 victory, a run rule victory in five innings on Friday. 4-3 the victory over South Alabama in eight innings. It took extras on Saturday, and then a 2-0 victory for Georgia Southern over South Alabama on Sunday. Really, really good weekend for softball.
Weekend they had to have.
Yeah.
We mentioned this during the weekend here at J.I. Clemens that South softball was typically one of the better programs in the league, and I know Georgia Southern's had their issues in Mobile the last few years. It's been a tough season. It's been tough scoring runs, but to pull off three straight, that's good stuff.
They will head to Atlanta to wrap up the regular season. It's hard to believe they're already wrapping up the regular season. It'll be at Georgia State Thursday and Friday. Thursday, 5 o'clock, the first pitch, and then a doubleheader beginning at 1 o'clock on Saturday against the Georgia State Panthers, and then they'll head to Sunbelt Conference tournament play over in Troy. Georgia Southern baseball had a pretty good week, but before we dive into the scores and the scheduling, a little bit of a scheduling note to get to. Georgia Southern baseball is supposed to be playing, again, we've talked about it time and time again. This week you had no scheduled midweek. Next week you're supposed to be playing Kennesaw State here at J.I. Clemens Stadium on May the 11th, next Tuesday. That one has been canceled, and kind of the story behind it, Kennesaw State, with their conference tournament being a week earlier than Georgia Southern's, and the way that the CDC regulates what they do in Cobb County, if something were to happen and the bus were have to be shut down because of COVID-19 on their way to or fro from Statesboro, then that would mean they don't get their conference tournament. They don't get to go to the ASUN tournament. So that one, just a little bit of precautionary, but because of that, they will make two trips to Statesboro next year, and Georgia Southern will not have to go up to Stillwell.
It smarts a little bit this year because it's a winnable home game in the midweek where Georgia Southern is trying to stack as many wins as possible because they've gotten into the at-large discussion, and it's great to be able to say that with an RPI of 65 going into the weekend at Arkansas State. It's a game you would have liked to have had. Look, from a safety sake, you can appreciate why Kennesaw is doing things the way they are and also agreeing to come down here twice in 2022 and the Eagles not having to go to Stillwell. But at the same time, not having another midweek can allow this team to get off their feet a little bit more because this becomes a 7-game road swing. Unless you can add a midweek home game within the next week, it's going to be tough to do with a lot of places having exams and a lot of places already having schedules filled. That would have to be a very specific one. Talked briefly with Coach Hennen after the victory over South on Sunday about what could you do, and he made some calls already. But I think the good part of that is if it doesn't get filled, which it's probably not, you've got three this weekend on the road, three next weekend on the road, the final midweek at Mercer on the road the following week. So it turns out that it's just a 4-game homestand, and you've got a stretch now where 14 of 18 are going to be on the road. But RPI-wise in baseball, we know that road victories are weighted more. So if the Eagles are going to improve, if they can do it on the road, that should help them even more.
Another note before we dive into the successes of Georgia Southern this past week. Today, minor league baseball opening day.
Woohoo!
Take a look on where Georgia Southern Eagles are stationed, and a very special station for one of them we'll get to in just a few moments. But everybody knows Sam Howard up with the Pittsburgh Pirates, made the opening day roster for Pittsburgh, and has been coming out of the bullpen for the Pirates ever since opening day. Jacob Chondrabogan initially was assigned to the Harrisburg Senators AA for the Washington Nationals, but because he got an invite to spring training, he is still at the alternate site for the Washington Nationals. Chase Cohen is making his way down to Midland for the Midland Rockhounds AA for the Oakland Athletics.
That's Midland, Texas.
Seth Schumann with the Lansing Lugnuts, the high A affiliate of Oakland, and he is the opening day starter for the Lugnuts.
Had a chance to talk to their broadcasters yesterday for a while, Jesse Goldberg, Strassler, and Adam Jackson, who's also the voice of Central Michigan. They were excited to find out more about Schumann, and for what we saw for 3 years, there's a lot to know about Schumann. Deep family, deep athletic ties, period, especially in this part of Georgia. And we're pretty thrilled that, one, we're having a minor league baseball season, and two, that Schumann gets to be the opening guy for a team. That's great stuff.
So he will start for the Lansing Lugnuts tonight against Lake County. Also have Joe Nahas down with the low-A affiliate of the Chicago Cubs down in Myrtle Beach, the home of the Pelicans. And was talking to their voice, Sam Wisenhunt, the last couple of days, and he was saying it was cool how when you're so close to Coastal Carolina, two guys that were involved in the 2019 championship game at Coastal Carolina, Scott Kobos of the Chanticleers, in that bullpen as well, but Nahas will be coming out of the bullpen for the Myrtle Beach Pelicans.
Remember the start they had against Little Rock in the tournament, and I think that's what got a lot of people's attention, even though he didn't get drafted. I remember that process when it got done. The Cubs wanted to take him, but things worked out where they ultimately went other directions, but he still got a pretty hefty signing bonus to ink with them as a free agent, and the coaching staff was already prepared to lose him, even though he didn't get selected, but glad to see he's going to get a chance to do something as well.
Also have Brian Eichhorn. He is still in extended spring training with the Cleveland Indians, and Blakely Brown still with the New York Yankees extended spring training as well. But this past week was a good one for Georgia Southern. It started on Tuesday against the Jacksonville Dolphins. 4-3, the victory for Georgia Southern over Jacksonville on Tuesday, and it was one that we talked with head coach Rodney Hinton after the game, the fact that it wasn't the best game for Georgia Southern. You could tell the road had kind of gotten a little bit weary for Georgia Southern a little bit, but the fact that you were able to find a way to win that game is something that was pretty impressive.
Coming back from Oklahoma, having a long delay out in Oklahoma City, getting back extremely early, what turned out to be on Monday morning. We didn't get back until Monday afternoon. I think it was good to get him back out there. In that instance, we said how you probably didn't want to have a midweek game this week or next to just try to chill a little bit and get those muscles and minds ready to go for the stretch run and then conference tournament play. But you could tell that there was a little bit lacking. Not that they didn't want the game, because, of course, you need as much as you get at this point when you're going for a Sun Belt championship and now an at-large bid, potentially, if you don't win the conference. Jacksonville swung it okay. But the story, which became a bigger story as the week went on, was Jay Thompson.
Yeah.
Picked up another win after Griffin Davis got his first start in more than 3 years. You saw the offense do enough. Nick Jones probably wasn't expecting to go in the midweek, but he earns another save, his 12th of the year. And it got the week off on the foot that it needed to be, considering the monster that was coming to Statesboro for the biggest series of the year in Sun Belt play.
It was that South Alabama Jaguars squad that would come in Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Georgia Southern takes 2 out of 3 of those. South Alabama came into the weekend with a 2-game lead in the Eastern Division, atop the Eastern Division standings. Georgia Southern in second place. After the weekend, South Alabama leaves with just a 1-game lead because Georgia Southern took 2 out of 3. But on Friday night, it was a 12-5 victory for South Alabama. You and I talked about it a couple of times throughout the broadcast, how the first 5-6 innings were just trading haymakers, and then a 6-run sixth inning is really what did it in for South Alabama.
It was a really well-played game through five. It was tied, and then Michael Sandel comes up and hits another home run. I hadn't seen anybody go oppo over the monster, and then to add good measure off the light tower. He's got some serious juice for somebody that's about 5'11", 185. 2 homers, 8 RBIs in the game. Somehow he wasn't Sun Belt Player of the Week. That's how good Trace Henry was for ULM, as they've hit a little bit of a hot streak. Warhawks have won 9 out of 11. But you end game one with a 12-5 loss. And number one, you lost a game to a team that you were hoping to at least get two from, so that puts you back on your heels for the final 2 days. But Georgia Southern hadn't lost an opening game in 2 months.
Yeah,
they had won 8 straight game ones. Number one, how good the offense has been to open series, but how good Tyler Owens has been. And even B.J. Green said the clock was probably going to strike midnight at some point. That's not saying that Owens couldn't have done this for a little while longer, but probably was going to run into somebody. Jags put bat to ball. Georgia Southern put bat to ball against Jeremy Lee. They knocked him out after only 45 pitches. But then you had to see how this team would really respond from adversity. And that's what we talked about directly with Coach Hennon going into the Saturday afternoon matchup. And it turned out that they were ready. And for that Jag bullpen that has been really good this year, in addition to their weekend starters in league play, it set the stage for a rubber game. That's all you could do on Saturday.
And you say that Tyler Owens didn't have his best stuff, and obviously he didn't. Only went 4 innings, gave up 5 runs, 2 strikeouts, 2 walks. But it wasn't that Tyler Owens was bad. And so I think, and we talked about it with Coach Hinton, you're going to have a hiccup at some point in the season. There's nobody that goes through an entire season without having one outing that they would like to erase. And so
Josh Wirth, it didn't happen to Josh Wirth, didn't happen to Sam Howard, right. Didn't happen to Chris Beck. It hadn't happened to Medeiros. It happens.
And so if this is the hiccup for Tyler Owens, I think you'll kind of take that because you still take 2 or 3 in the weekend, and then you get him back on track.
And you get a chance to get him back on track on the road against a good offensive team in Ark State. We'll talk with Matt Stolz about that in greater detail. But you almost were okay with seeing Owens look a little bit normal, especially after him carving up Oklahoma the weekend before, 7 innings and 1 run out in Norman. He's still the guy. Just because he was knocked off a little bit doesn't mean he isn't the guy. T.O. is still T.O., and you know he's going to be ready to roll this weekend, especially as this team gets closer to try to win the East Division.
Friday was the salute to service. It was good to have Staff Sergeant Antoine Shade join us in the booth in
it was.
5th inning, I believe it was.
He's really good.
Really, really nice guy. But then on Saturday, it was Celebrate Agriculture Day, presented by Case IH Tidewater, also the Georgia Cotton Commission and the Georgia Peanut Commission. Visited with a couple of people from the different commissions as well as Tidewater. Trent Sinkbeil was who joined us, the branch manager of Tidewater and Case IH. And then you had Taylor Sills, the executive director of Georgia Cotton. Got to hang out with those guys a little bit in the booth. Really, really good people and really, really good partners for Georgia Southern Athletics. But it was a 11-2 victory for Georgia Southern over the South Alabama Jaguars on that Saturday. And it starts, yes, it started early for Georgia Southern, but didn't necessarily cash in until the 4th inning when you put 2 runs on the board.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, the bullpen really came through for Georgia Southern, and it starts with Jay Thompson. Chase Dolander goes two and two-thirds innings of work, rather, and then had a little bit of shoulder tightness again. He comes out, just precautionary measures. He'll still be in the weekend rotation coming up this weekend. But Jay Thompson, 3 2/3 innings of work, only allowing 2 runs, 1 walk, and 3 strikeouts. He was really good over 57 pitches.
With those lefties that are so used to teeing off on guys, especially preseason player of the year, Ethan Wilson, he's coming from out here. I don't know if you can pick me up on the – can you pick me up on the – or am
yeah.
I – okay. A little bit, no?
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. Either way. But even talking with some of the South Alabama people, Wilson told them that I cannot pick the ball up off this guy. And it's, you know, it's going to be 82-84. But Jay willed his way through 3 2/3 and 57 pitches, got the 11-2 win. 5 different guys had multi-hit games. And then you go into Sunday thinking, okay, you know that Jordan Jackson is going to start. You know that Jalen Payton did not pitch in the midweek, so probably we're going to see him. But what other arms were you going to have? At that point, you weren't anticipating Jay Thompson to be available because of the 57 pitches just the day before. But then, as we're talking with Coach Hennon, right before we talk with Coach Hennon on Sunday, one of the top moments in the 6 years that I've covered this baseball team.
We're standing there talking to Alan Beck and B.J. Green, and turn around, Jay Thompson walks up, he comes and shakes B.J.'s hand, and B.J.'s like, how you doing? You good? And Jay's like, yeah, I just wanted to tell you my arm feels good. I can throw if you need me to. And the jubilation that came out of that man may have been the most excited I've ever seen BJ. And then because of all the commotion, Coach Hennon comes out of his office and is like, what's going on? And Jay's like, I can pitch if you need me to. Just as nonchalant and just matter of fact as he is. And Coach is like, you want me to put you on the list? He goes, yeah, I mean, I don't want to sit down there, just do nothing.
He took that team in just a few words and did this.
Yeah.
And it turned out that, well, they needed him.
It would move on to Sunday afternoon as Georgia Southern picks up the 7-6 victory over the South Alabama Jaguars. Jay Thompson, he comes in. He only throws an inning. He only threw 15 pitches. But whenever he went down to the bullpen in the 3rd or 4th inning, he sprints down to the bullpen, by the way, and starts warming up, you saw a little bit of an extra boost. And I don't know that I've seen somebody going to the bullpen be an extra boost for a team, but he certainly was. He pitches the 5th inning, has it scoreless. Georgia Southern scores 2 in the bottom half of the 5th inning to take the lead at 6-5. And then Georgia Southern would not relinquish the lead. You had a really big insurance run in the bottom of the 8th inning after Mason McWhorter ties the school career record in doubles. He moves up on a wild pitch, comes home on a wild pitch as well, and a 7-5 lead at that point going to the 9th inning. South Alabama would score a run in the ninth, but Georgia Southern able to close it out as Nick Jones picks up save number 13.
Yeah, not used to seeing Nick give up runs because it's only the third time it's happened all year, and it hadn't happened since East Carolina on February 28th. It had been more than 25 innings. He only given up 14 hits over those, I think it was 18 appearances. But credit South for having the approach with Montiel, quick bat to double down the left field line. You had a bit of a controversial call at first place on the ball that Sandel hit that was hopping around with a lot of English on the first base grass, went into foul territory. Jason Swan sprawled out to just grab it. His body was on the base before Sandel got there. They got the call correct on the field. We saw the replay. It was confirmed. South didn't have that benefit. They lost it. Calvi comes back out after it didn't get changed. You knew he was going to get thrown out. And then even though they got the run after that, Jones retires the pinch hitter Sorrenti with a fastball. And what a moment and what a weekend for Georgia Southern, as Aaron Soka said on social media. You made that statement. Now you just got to keep making statements the rest of the year.
That was the versus cancer game for Georgia Southern. We talked with Coach Hinnon before the game how important it was for this team to have a cause like this. You're working with the Pediatric Brain Tumor Foundation, being able to raise their goal of over $10,000. I think top 10, I think they got into 8th or 9th in the country.
By the end of the game, yeah.
The most raised around the whole country as far as the Versus Cancer Foundation, but a really, really good cause, and you and I got to sit down there for a little while and watch some of the heads get shaved.
Jarrett Brown's mop getting shaved off was pretty funny because the entire team stuck around till the end to watch JB lose all of his hair. We were wondering if Nick Jones was going to be able to keep his, but they didn't raise the $10,000 until after he got his cut. It did get a little trim. He kept the mustache because that's a huge part of Nick's marketability. But watching some of the other guys, and especially after a victory, talked briefly with Coach Beck, talked with Coach Hinnon. He hadn't seen the replay that we did regarding that play at first in the ninth inning. I told him that it was a good call on the field. Colin was on the field at that point and said that from across the way, it looked good. In a play like that where it could have resulted in the game changing, if that ends up getting called safe, South has first and third, nobody out, instead of just one on with one out. But ultimately, Jones does pick up the save. Number 13 is tied for the national lead, and he's now four away from tying the school record. Awesome.
Now Georgia Southern will turn the attention to the Arkansas State Red Wolves, and we're happy to be joined by the voice of the Red Wolves, Matt Stoles. Matt, appreciate you joining us.
Hey, anytime. Great to be with you boys.
Making the trip out to Arkansas on Thursday, but give us kind of the overall feel of what this Arkansas State Red Wolves team is about.
Well, a whole lot better feel around this team than at the start of the year. This is a team that's come a long way over the course of the last couple of months, and you know, just a really tough start for this team, and you know, a lot of younger players in some big roles that really hadn't been in those roles in the past, and I think a lot of guys have kind of found their identity, especially over the course of the last 3 or 4 weeks. And I feel like this team is really starting to get going right now and play their best ball heading into the final month of the season. And if you're going to play your best ball at some point, this is obviously the right time.
We've talked about it a little bit already, how it really seems like the weekend starting rotation has kind of solidified itself a little bit. Who are some of those guys that have taken that next step as the season has gone on?
Well, I think that's really one of the big keys to this team right now, and why they're having the success that they have been over the course of the last several weeks is that we finally have a starting rotation in place. And it took a while to kind of find that. You know, this is a pitching staff that didn't get to pitch on the opening weekend of the season back in February. They were snowed out. So they missed that opening weekend. Seemed like they were a little bit behind. And we really didn't know who was going to step into those starting roles on the weekend. And it took a while to figure out. And I think once we finally got around to the start of April, the rotation was set. And you know, we've seen a lot of quality starts out of the starters. We don't have, you know, just a guy that's going to blow you away on the mound, but we've got three guys on the weekend that are going to get you 15 to 18 outs every single time out. And, you know, I think every one of these pitchers on the weekend have been very reliable over the course of the last month or so. Brandon Hudson will be the Friday night starter, Will Nash on Saturday, and then Carter Holt on Sunday. And, you know, they've got a chance to give you those five or six innings every time out and, you know, keep you in the ball game. And really, that's all you can ask for out of your starter.
Matt, last time we saw you guys, Kyle McDonald was the mainstay in the offense. He was the preseason player of the year 2 years ago. Now we look at the roster, and it's guys like Liam Hicks and Ben Klutz and Blake McCutcheon that are starting to come through. How much has the offense changed since the last time that we saw you guys, May of 2 years ago?
Well, this is as good of an offense right now as I can remember it in some time. You look at what they're doing offensively, and really, you know, you look at a lot of the categories, Danny, and the Red Wolves are second in the league only to Georgia Southern right now, and that includes scoring. The Red Wolves are averaging 6.3 runs per game, and, you know, Georgia Southern is just a shade above that. So you look at that, and then you look at on base percentage as a team. The Red Wolves are second in the league in that category. So they got a lot of guys that are getting on base. I really like the top four in our order. You know, Drew Tipton and Liam Hicks have been fantastic in those 1-2 spots. And a couple of guys that are on base a lot. Drew Tipton doesn't have a huge batting average. It's not where he wants it to be, but the on-base percentage is well over 400 right now. He leads the league in walks. He's top five in the league in HBP, so he finds a way to get on base. And then Liam Hicks is as good of a hitter as we've had at Arkansas State. He's a guy that the scouts just love. You know, he's batting .388. He's second in the league, only behind Mason McWhorter right now. And then he leads the league in on-base percentage at .519, which is top 15 in the country. Ben Klutz in the three spot is hitting around .300 right now. He's really come on over the course of the last 3 or 4 weeks. And then, you know, we got Tyler Duncan back in the cleanup spot, and he's leading the league in runs batted in right now. He's got 42 RBIs. So you look at those top four, they're as dangerous as any top fours you'll see in the Sun Belt at this moment.
Since it has been so long since Georgia Southern has seen this Arkansas State team, give us an idea of what the kind of mentality of a Tommy Raffo coach team is.
Well, they're tough. I mean, and generally, you go back over the years, his teams have been at their best, you know, at the end of the season. And we've seen a lot of slow starts over the years, and the Red Wolves somehow have been able to turn it on down the stretch. And, you know, hopefully that's what we're seeing from this team once again this year. You don't like the slow start aspect to that, but you also like the way his teams seem to finish and get better as the season goes along. And I think that's certainly the case here. And you look over the years and you know, the Red Wolves have been able to be competitive down the stretch, and especially come conference tournament time. There was a stretch there of 8 years where the Red Wolves, you know, had won at least two games in the conference tournament those 8 seasons in a row, which no program in the history of the Sun Belt can boast about that. So it's something that A-State would love to do again this year, and hopefully can get to the conference tournament with a little bit of momentum, and you know, once they get down to Montgomery, make a little bit of a run.
The schedule has been pretty tough for Arkansas State. Looking up and down it, you've got a number of Power 5 opponents. You've got a 3-game series against Oklahoma. You'll be having your second midweek matchup with Ole Miss later on tonight. But what has kind of the tougher schedule done for this Arkansas State team?
Well, it's collected a lot of travel points. you know, it's unlike anything I've ever been a part of. I put out something on Twitter yesterday about just how much the Red Wolves have been on the road. And, you know, 25 of their first 36 games have been on the road. And out of 293 teams in Division I baseball this year, there's only 14 of those teams that have played a higher percentage of games as true road games. So A-State's been on the road a lot, and most all of those teams are to the north. And we know those northern teams have to travel south, especially early in the season, just to get games in. But A-State's in a really unique spot. They've been on the road a lot, and Yes, tonight the Red Wolves are scheduled to go over to Oxford and take on an Ole Miss team that's ranked in the top 10. So, you know, not only have they been on the road, but they've played an extremely challenging schedule. You know, Ole Miss, Mississippi State. We're going to play Arkansas for the first time in school history coming up next week.
Awesome.
So it's been a very challenging schedule. And, you know, I think that as challenging as it's been, I think it goes I think there's a little bit of an argument that, you know, the Red Wolves have been able to get better during this stretch away from home. And I think they're hoping it kind of pays dividends in this final month of the season now.
All right, I know that you're going to be out of pocket on Friday, but is there any chance that we can steal you on Thursday night for some kind of rendezvous at one of those fancy pizza places you got out in Jonesboro?
Well, unfortunately, I'm going to be out of town on Thursday night already. Ah. But, man, we've got plenty of them here in Jonesboro. And, you know, I've got several that I can recommend for you and Colin.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about Jonesboro, but it has become the pizza town of the Sun Belt, I think.
Well, we've got a lot of them. We've got one of those places, Lost Pizza Company's, the place where we do our football and basketball coaches shows, and it is fantastic. So that's certainly one of them that we could recommend, but there's a whole list of great pizza places here in Jonesboro.
Finally, before we let you go, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, Georgia Southern will be in Jonesboro. What does this weekend mean for this Arkansas State team?
That means a lot. I mean, I think that when you look at the Western Division standings right now, there's still a lot of things that can happen. I think UTA, you know, after their big weekend last weekend, sweeping Little Rock, they've kind of solidified themselves a little bit in that top spot. But then you look behind them and you've got Little Rock, Lafayette, and Texas State all tied at 9-9. And then the Red Wolves have played one less weekend than those teams. They're sitting there at 6-9. So with three conference weekends to go for the Red Wolves, two for everybody else, there's still a lot that can happen. And obviously the Red Wolves are hoping to find a way to win a series this weekend and take advantage of being at home for once. And, you know, if they can do that, then it certainly would go a long way into getting a higher seed come conference tournament time.
Matt, really appreciate you taking some time with us. Looking forward to catching up with you this weekend.
All right, you know I love you, boys. I'm looking forward to seeing it, too, and maybe we can grab some pizza at some point.
Sounds like a plan. Thanks, Matt.
All right.
Once again, that's Matt Stoles, the voice of the Arkansas State Red Wolves.
He's such a good dude.
Love him. He's one of our favorite that we get to see around the Sun Belt Conference. We've talked about it a lot. There's a lot of really good people around this conference. We talk about Brant Freeman and Bill Colhane a lot with Texas State, Jay Walker down in Louisiana, Mike Hammett, Nick White with Monroe. So many good people around this league.
In the case of Ark State, haven't seen them much in about a year because of COVID restrictions and because the Sun Belt doesn't want Georgia Southern and Arkansas State to play in a major sport, I guess. We didn't see him in football this year. So getting a chance to hang with him a little bit down in Pensacola for the conference basketball tournament, that's the first time I'd seen him in a year. I hadn't seen Josh Sowers in more than a year. I still haven't seen Brant Freeman in about a year and a half just because of the whole Texas State fiasco. They're on their way to Austin to battle number 5 Texas tonight at UFCU Dish Falk Stadium. But this league is full of really, really good people, really good broadcasters, and it's better for us when you can combine those two, and wherever we go, we're going to be taken care of, and we just hope that we do the same for those guys when they visit Statesboro.
And we are going to eat a lot of pizza this weekend out in Jonesboro. For whatever reason, there are more pizza places that are absolutely phenomenal than anywhere else on earth in Jonesboro, Arkansas. Fun fact you probably didn't know. But this weekend it'll be a 7 o'clock first pitch on Friday, 7 o'clock on Saturday, and then moved up to a 12 noon start on Sunday, all of those Eastern times, and we will have air coverage for you 30 minutes prior on the Georgia Southern Sports Network. But before we get into this week's U-Pick, take a quick look on the Sun Belt Conference standings for Georgia Southern, sitting in second place in the Eastern Division, one game back of South Alabama. Behind Georgia Southern in the 3 spot, you've got Troy and Appalachian State tied at 3.5 back of South Alabama. Then 4 games back are the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers and Georgia State bringing up the rear, 5 games behind the lead on the western side, a lot like Matt talked about. UT Arlington, a 2.5-game lead over Louisiana. Louisiana, Little Rock, and Texas State all tied at 9-9 for second spot in that western division. Arkansas State, just a game and a half behind that logjam for second. They are 4 back of Arlington, and ULM 4.5 back of Arlington in the west. So really and truly in the west, you've got UT Arlington trying to separate themselves a little bit. But outside of that, it's all up for grabs.
Coastal hosts Troy this weekend. App steps out of league play. They go to Miami for a 3-game series this weekend. I guess that's the trade-off when Miami goes up there for football, then App baseball goes down there for a 3-game series to Coral Gables or whatever.
I think Miami got the south end of that deal.
No. South. But the part for Georgia Southern is that by separating themselves between second and third, a good weekend in Jonesboro, they could conceivably clinch a top two seed because the Eagles only have 2 conference weekends left, both against the West. They've got to take on UT Arlington here to wrap up the regular season. We know their weekend pitching has gotten a lot better. The lineup is maybe as good as it has been under head coach Darren Thomas. I know that's out there a little bit. But for Georgia Southern, I do like the fact that they didn't sweep because it still gives them that edge. It gives them that shooting point. They're going to be a game back of South going to Jonesboro. They're going to need to win all 3 games to take over first because with each win, you only gain a half game. Now, why are you saying that? Because South plays Texas State this weekend in San Marcos. That's a non-conference series.
Yeah.
So those stats, those wins, those losses do not count towards a Sun Belt total. So South still has its 2 series. They've got to host Coastal. Then they go to App to end the regular season as Georgia Southern tries to climb that ladder, win its second straight East Division championship. But if they keep winning, then they would guarantee themselves a top 2 seed in the East and a pole position in one of those 4 pools in the conference tourney.
And it's something we've talked about a little bit, but haven't necessarily gone into in full detail. But for the Sun Belt Conference Tournament, we know it's gone to pool play. You're going to have 4 pools of 3 teams each. And so the top 2 are going to be kind of the headliners of each of those pools.
Yes.
And if those pools end up being 1-1 for all 3 teams, the higher seed is the one that advances. And so having one of those top 2 teams or having one of those top 2 positions in each division is absolutely crucial because over a 3-day stretch where you're playing so many games, it just kind of sets itself up to go 1-1.
Some teams are going to have to worry about playing early, playing on that first day. That's going to be your lower seeds. In some cases, a team is going to be there 3 days and not playing a game just with the way the pools have set up. I believe that there's at least 2 games each day until you get to Saturday, which is semifinal Saturday, where whoever takes the top spot in one pool will play the bottom team from the victor of the other pool. So that means the top seed in the East would play the lowest seed in the West. Top seed in the West would play the lowest team in the East. Those 2 move on to Championship Sunday at Riverwalk Stadium. We are looking forward to it like you wouldn't believe, but there is still a lot that needs to be decided. And I will say this about this weekend at Jonesboro. You could look at Ark State's record and say this should be easy for Georgia Southern. Don't walk into that trap. This is a really good offensive team. You heard Matt spit out some of the numbers already. Their weekend rotation's been really good for about 3 weeks now. They're coming off of a sweep on the road. I know Austin Peay doesn't have a great record this year, but that is very tough to sweep somebody on the road, and I'll be anxious to see how they play Ole Miss tonight down in Oxford. I know there's supposed to be some bad weather. That game may not happen. But if they can perform well, they'd have a 5-game winning streak all on the road going back home, where they're trying to increase their own standing in a tied-up West Division.
7 o'clock Eastern time, the first pitch on Friday and Saturday, and then a 12 noon first pitch coming up on Sunday from Jonesboro. Looking forward to this trip. One of the more unique trips that we go on, Jonesboro a little bit off the beaten path. We have to fly into Memphis on Thursday, and then about an hour and a half-ish.
Not the way you drive.
Well, it's supposed to be an hour and a half.
Yeah,
hour and a half, let's put it that way.
Okay. Keep people safe.
Over to Jonesboro. But one of the fun trips, a really cool town of Jonesboro. Not the biggest town, but it's a town that really rallies around Arkansas State. We've talked about the media coverage that they get in the town. It's really, really fantastic. And we might have to do our radio row.
I would guess that Kara Ritchie and Brad Bobo will need some programming this weekend. I won't try to create controversy like we did there a couple of years ago.
Yeah, we did.
But we'll see Bobo doing the E-plus portion of the broadcast this weekend. out of Tomlinson Stadium. Matt's stepdaughter is going into seminary.
Fantastic.
So that's why he won't be there on Friday, but we'll get to see him on Saturday, hopefully catch up with him maybe after Sunday when the series is concluded. But we have not been to Jonesboro in a couple years.
Wow.
Just because of no football. I guess it would have been November of 19, right before the Cure Bowl. I guess that would have been the last time we were out there. So almost 2 years.
I'll take your word for it.
Okay.
7 o'clock first pitch on both Friday and Saturday, 12 noon on Sunday. As we step into this week's You Pick segment, making sure we haven't gotten no SWAT, they don't. We'll leave it at that. But this week's You Pick segment, coming from Aaron Soka, your favorite baseball memory that you've been a part of.
Oh, God.
And I don't know if he means at Georgia Southern and your life with you on the field. So you get to pick the you pick of Aaron's you pick.
I'll keep it simple just because we're not very far away from where it happened. We're in the main press area here at J.I. Clements, and we were in the visiting booth the night that this happened. I'll say Logan Baldwin's grand slam against Louisiana in 17.
Ooh, that's a good one.
This place
went, came unglued.
There were cracks in the ground. It shook.
There was a guide wire that fell too.
Well, that didn't happen until the championship on Sunday, but this was 2017 Sunbelt Tournament. Cajuns had taken an early lead. Georgia Southern needed a big rally in the ninth inning. Dylan Moore had come in, and he was almost unhittable for a couple of years when he was the Cajuns closer. But I think the Eagles put together four consecutive hits to start the ninth, and then after an out, Baldwin comes up against Colton Schultz, the lefty, and hung a breaking ball, and he was the first Eagle to hit one over the monster. And it didn't happen until the tournament. Remember, we got delayed. We were on for more than 4 hours. We didn't get finished until about 1 o'clock in the morning, but ironically, it was Seth Schumann that recorded the final six outs. Because that game went extras. That grand slam didn't win the game. Cajuns came back and scored a run in the bottom of the ninth. They were the home team. And then Evan McDonald had to throw out the run that would have ended Georgia Southern's season at the plate just to get to the 10th. It goes 11. Jordan Wren hits a go-ahead double off of Jevin Huval. And then Schumann ends up closing it out. That ended the Cajun season. They were possibly on the cusp of an at-large, but remember, that was the year where the Sunbelt Tournament had to go single elimination because of the two rainouts. The only way to get them all in was to go single elimination. I'm not going to talk about what happened on Sunday, but that moment when Baldwin's home run cleared that monster and this place, it just was this. I remember spotting one person in the crowd of all that, and it was the same person I saw two times, Big Frank.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Craig Frederick.
I saw him later, but he wasn't the one, because I'm looking around seeing what everybody else is doing. Are we jumping on dugouts? Are we climbing up nets? Are we?
The answer to both of that was yes.
Trying to get arrested, whatever. But in all the madness, the one person I saw both nights was Big Frank. And I know it didn't go the way that we wanted the end of the weekend, but that moment, that game, two of those three games are the two best baseball games I think I've ever seen live.
Yeah, I could get on board with that. Before we get to mine, Brandy Boston said that yours was a good one, and it reminded me that we haven't talked about it a whole lot, but everything that Brandy has had to do for Georgia Southern baseball, getting everybody COVID tested this year, making sure that everybody is safe this year, making sure this season can happen. A big part of that goes to Brandy Boston, helping us get vaccinated the last couple of days. Got our second shot yesterday. Yes?
Yesterday.
Yes. God, that seems like so long ago.
And it will be in a couple of weeks when we're fully go.
Yeah, no kidding. But a huge thank you and a huge shout out goes to Brandy Boston for everything that she does for Georgia Southern baseball. My favorite baseball memory is a little bit different. Mine goes back to 2020. The beginning of the season of 2020, women's basketball was in Louisiana.
I know where you're going.
And getting to go to Teague Moore Field for opening night, down for the Raging Cajuns, and the fact that it was the day that they were – paying tribute to Tony Robichaux. He had passed away in the offseason, and being able to see that preseason or pregame ceremony, and then for that place to be absolutely packed and hear center field, that day was one of my favorites.
And probably not a whole lot of dry eyes that night either.
No, there weren't. And especially not in the press box.
Yeah, I can't imagine what that was like.
It was unreal to be able to sit in the booth, and a huge thank you goes out to Jay Walker and Brad Topham for letting me come up and experience that, because it's somebody that was so close to both Jay and Top, Josh Bruner as well, in the booth with us. But being able to experience that with all of those people that had meant so much to Tony Robichaux, that Tony Robichaux had meant so much to, was really, really special.
And this is why we speak about our broadcasting colleagues in this league so much, and that's why we stress our relationships so much, because those give you that experience. Otherwise, you would have been there, oh, then Cajun baseball's playing. You don't have that close relationship. You're probably not there. You're not getting a 36 hat with,
yeah,
in tribute to Tony. And it's,
and all of that goes to just kind of show what the family of the Sunbelt broadcasters really are. I mean, yeah, we got together a couple of times on Zoom during quarantine just to be able to go out and hang out, with people.
Which, by the way, Kara Ritchie kind of outed our our Zooms during the summer.
Oh, we got outed?
I think Jay may have told her. I'm not sure if Matt did, but it's funnier for the story if Jay did.
Yeah.
Because she mentioned it on one of the weekday shows with Stoltz. Are you guys going to have another Zoom? And Matt says, well, we're going to try. We're going to see, get everybody together.
That's fantastic. But a lot of it just goes to, we're around these people more than we are our families a lot of times.
Yeah.
I mean, we talk about how we haven't seen Brant Freeman, hadn't seen Jay Walker in a year or whatever, but normally we're around these people so much that it becomes your second family. When we get to Montgomery, it's like a family reunion because everybody's there.
All 12 teams this year. The league did that absolutely right, because nobody had a chance to do it last year. Everybody's going to be there. We'll get a chance to catch up, watch some really good baseball for a week, and then hopefully most everybody will be able to make it to New Orleans for Football Media Day. That's going to be live this year. That's what we're being told at this current time.
We still hadn't been told that last year's got canceled.
That is a good point.
Just ask Jay Walker.
We can do it in Montgomery. But the undercard almost becomes baseball when you get to Montgomery. Everybody wants to win a championship, but at the same time, refreshing those relationships, catching up, and just spending some time together it's a really big deal for us.
Do have a question coming in before we wrap this one up. SWAT wants to know, does the fact that we have no midweek game this week and next change our pitching strategy for the weekend? I don't really think it does. I think it helps your pitching strategy, if anything, because of the fact that you've got so many guys down in that Eagle bullpen that are able to give you innings, and now you've got kind of the pick of the litter of who you want not having a midweek. We saw Jalen Payton come in on Sunday for Georgia Southern, being able to have him throw because he didn't throw the midweek the weekend prior.
Right.
And so now you've got him for the weekend if you want him. And it just kind of opens up a couple of more doors for head coach Ronnie Hinton and BJ Green.
This part of the season, these next 2 weeks, I'd rather have the rest going into conference play. You could say, well, these guys need experience. They need to be able to throw in a midweek setting, which there's some validity to that. But by this time, most guys have thrown somewhere between 7 and 15 games. If you're coming out of the bullpen, if you're looking like you're a Tyler Owens, a Dolander, a Jackson, a Payton, if he gets a chance to work a little bit more on the weekends, then they know where they're going to be anyway. But in the case of Jalen, I think he's pretty intriguing, because now you can stretch him out maybe a little bit more should you need him in some longer relief. Now that we've seen what Jay Thompson can do when he's not just coming in to face a couple of lefties or a couple of righties to get a couple of outs. His last six appearances, he has 4 wins and a save. So he's turning into somebody that can be used not just one day for a lot of pitches, but apparently the next day to win another game as well.
All right, and I've said this 3 times now that before we wrap it up, but there was just another layer that got added to this whole Seth Schumann starting on opening day thing.
Okay.
And I don't even know if you have known this yet. Tonight, Lansing taking on Lake County.
Mm-hmm.
Lansing Lugnuts, the high affiliate of the Oakland Athletics. We talked about it earlier. Seth Schumann, the opening night starter. Take a guess who the opening night starter for Lake County is.
It would make sense if it was Eichhorn.
Nope.
He wasn't assigned. But
Hunter Gaddis from Georgia State.
Oh, come on.
That's a rematch.
That's a rematch from his last road start.
Yep, Hunter Gaddis against Seth Schumann tonight.
I had no idea. That's awesome.
It's a 7 o'clock first pitch tonight for Lansing and Lake County. That's going to be one you've got to tune into on MILB.com.
Southern Knot State turns pro.
That's fantastic.
That's too cool.
I was looking up to see what time the first pitch was, and it says Lansing, probable pitcher, Schumann, and then Lake County, it says Gaddis. I was like, no.
And it was a third-round pick?
Yeah.
Right after 19, that's...
So Hunter Gaddis against Seth Schumann tonight for Lake County against the Lansing Lugnuts.
That is fantastic.
That's amazing.
That is must-watch.
No doubt. We'll tune in tonight at 7 o'clock for the first pitch for Seth Schumann as he is the opening date starter for the High A affiliate of the Oakland Athletics, the Lansing Lugnuts, and then this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for Georgia Southern against the Arkansas State Red Wolves. Until this weekend, for the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.